Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Rights Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Joyce Starr. The Rights Radio Self-Help Hour is brought to you by StarPublications.com. That's Star with two R's, where consumer, homeowner, health, and safe pet care rights have a permanent address. If you have a problem with a condo or HOA board, purchase our Homeowners Defense Kit. If you need a direct assistance with your homeowners association or a quick shot of optimism counseling, call me at 786-693-4223. Now, our topic today is home security, how to prevent home invasions, burglaries, and personal attacks. And my guest is Paul Pradines. Paul has over 25 years' experience in law enforcement, including 20 years in SWAT, that's Special Weapons and Tactics, 12 years as a SWAT team leader, and 7 years' experience as supervisor of the burglary strike force in Palm Beach. The tactical police unit he headed specializes in covert patrols, intelligence gathering, and surveillance. After retiring from police work, he started his own company, Tactical Security Consultants, Inc. Welcome, Paul, and so nice to have you on the Rights Radio Self-Help Hour.
Hi, Joyce. It's great to be here. I hope I can do some good for some of your listeners and be interesting at the same time, make them a little safer in their homes and when they're traveling.
I do as well. I think it would be wonderful if you could begin by explaining the origins of Tactical Security Consultants and what you do.
Well, I'm pretty fortunate. After I got out of police work, being in Palm Beach and the area, I was able to meet a lot of very rich and affluent people that run large corporations. And the way the world is now, there's a huge demand for protection of executives, protection of their physical assets, and protection of their families also. And one thing that I found out in doing this is that there's just so many different aspects of it that it's very challenging. You have to be expert or have knowledge in a wide variety of things. A couple things that I do. Would be traveling with them when they go overseas. I'll conduct risk assessments for them and make sure that where they're going is safe. I'll provide trained executive protection personnel to, and I'll also go and supervise that assignment myself when they're traveling. And besides doing that, I assess their safety of their children, which are that scares me the most. These people are in positions where they have to be aware of where their kids are, what they're doing all the time, and that's the type of thing I work with most of the time, except when we're doing physical assessments of their businesses and things like that. So it's pretty interesting, and I think a lot of the things I do, the ordinary person might benefit from because it kind of crosses over.
Well, I understand that large Palm Beach estates have been the target of many professional burglaries. How do professional burglars get into these large estates without detection?
All right. Well, professional burglars are a little different animal than your average burglar. And if you can protect against these guys and you take the safeguards to protect against them, you're in pretty good shape. These type of burglars, They are very sophisticated. They usually work in teams. They'll have cell phones for communications or portable radios. And what they do, if you have a house, one thing you want to remember is don't think that because you have a backyard and a fence and trees that you're safe back there because somebody can see in that house. You want to make sure you have curtains and don't keep your place open with all the lights on at night because that's a perfect viewing area for the burglars to check out your home and what you have. And in Palm Beach, it was an ideal place for professional burglars because they would what they do is they go up the power line easements in between these large estates, and they can do this in your neighborhood too. There's usually power line easements and things like that, and they go in and they just look at the back of the houses. And they look right in there at night. They see what you have. They see where you are. They see your habits. And then when they make their final decision to target a home, they come in there. They usually do it. A lot of professionals will do it when the people are home. And the reason that they will do that is because they're more likely to have their jewelry there and money, and the alarm systems won't be on. So they will go in there. They target a certain area that has nice houses. They check out what's in there. They see where the residents are. And a lot of times, believe it or not, they do these burglaries when the residents are there. So even when you're home, you need to keep your place secured, and you don't want it visible for people to see in. And what they'll do also is look inside and see if the alarm, if they can see your alarm panel, they're going to look at what color the light is and see if that alarm is activated or not. So you don't want to have those alarm panels where someone could look in and see that. Go ahead, Joyce.
I was just going to ask you on that point, what can the homeowner and the homeowner who may not have a big estate do to prevent the burglar from being able to look in the window? Is there a kind of a film on the window that would prevent anyone looking in, but you could still have your view? I mean, of course, we all know there is such a film, but does it work?
Well, yeah, tinting does. Use the right tint. It has to be dark, and it would still probably be sufficient where you could see out well enough during the day, but I recommend being able to close it off with some, you have tinting and you can open the curtains during the day, but it really needs to be closed up at night because that's just a known method of operation for these guys to come in there, and it's so easy to get to the back of the house and see everything that's going on.
All right, but let us say that they understand that you're home. Isn't there a bigger danger for them in terms of actually committing a crime against a person? The burglars aren't worried at all that they will confront the owners and may end up hurting them?
Well, it's a little bit different situation in Palm Beach. There is enhanced penalties, and the burglars know that if they break into an occupied dwelling. However, if they go to the higher-end homes, they're not worried about that. And what they'll do is if they can see you in the home and they know that you guys are down there on the first floor and you're eating dinner, they're going to go up to the second floor balcony, break into the bedroom, go right where everybody keeps their jewelry, which is probably in the master bedroom, hidden maybe in the jewelry case, but if you shouldn't have it there, but it's either going to be in a drawer in the dresser or probably in the walk-in closet in one of the drawers there, or maybe even in a pocket inside some of the clothes in the closet. It's human nature. People hide same things in the same places. Professional burglars know it, and you do not use these places because they will check those places in minutes. And a lot of times these burglars come in, the people are home, they don't even know they were in the house because they keep the upstairs doors unlocked, windows on balconies unlocked, and burglars know it. It's human nature. They go in there, do their burglary, and are gone, and no one even knows they were there until they a few days later when they find things missing.
When that happens, if they do end up confronting the owners, are the owners typically injured in some encounter, or are they tied up? What tends to happen if they do encounter the owners?
Well, I'm talking about professionals now, and actually the professionals, the people that we have actually arrested for this, they don't really carry weapons. So that's another enhanced charge, and they're so good, they're usually in and out, and they don't run into people. And even if they did, they'd be back out the way they came in so fast you wouldn't have time to react. But on another note, if you're in an area of town where you just have your regular old, drug addict, crackhead-type person coming in, that's a whole different world, whole different scenario. Those guys are more likely to have some type of a weapon, and you have to be careful. You don't want to try to grab somebody, stop them. What we want to do is get away, get on your phone, call the police. They're going to run when they see you, hopefully, and you just need to get out of there. If you have to leave the house.
What about firearms? Should the owner have a firearm in their home or a taser?
Okay, that's a good question, and I'm a person that believes everybody has that legal right, and if I wasn't a police officer, I would have still had a firearm to protect my family with. But you have to remember, if you're going to have a firearm, there's a lot of responsibility that goes along with it. You have to be very careful where you store that thing, because as a police officer, I saw some real tragedies where kids get hold of guns. And it's something that you, if you have a firearm, you don't ever want to deal with as long as you live. I've seen it. You want to make sure that gun is safe and secured. And also that your children, as soon as they're old enough, they need to be educated about firearms. Absolutely, the more education a child has about guns, the less curiosity they have. So definitely educate your kids. And the other two things I recommend, get good training on that firearm, and the other thing is practice with it. You have to practice on a regular basis. You have to have that mindset that you could use it and you have confidence in it. So the other question you had about the taser, outstanding weapon. I carried it in police work. It was one of the best advances in less lethal technology I have ever seen. It also requires some training. If you get one, you're going to have to practice shooting it. It's not a weapon, so you don't have to have any special, it's not a firearm, so you don't have to have any special licenses, but you have to be careful with that also, because it fires probes, and these probes, if a kid gets hold of it, you can shoot themselves in the eye, and it can cause extensive damage. So same cautions go with the taser.
What types of really tough situations, dangerous situations, have you experienced? Have you seen that you would like to share with our listeners?
Well, in police work? Are you talking about
Yes.
In SWAT? Okay.
Yes, in SWAT, right.
Well, I can give you an example of one. Probably one of the most dangerous situations we ran into was when we're doing what we call buy bus and involving vehicles. So typically what we have in that situation is we have an undercover officer or we have an informant, and they are, the drug dealer is actually delivering the drugs, and which usually is a large amount of cocaine. In the situation that I'm thinking of now, he came up to the area where they were meeting. We had a wire on the guy so we could hear the informant talking. And it was a large amount of cocaine. He was telling him, I hope you're not a cop. I have a gun. And what's so dangerous about these situations is we make the arrest as soon as the drug transaction takes place, and we have to block in this vehicle. So not only does the bad guy have a gun and threatening to, you know, shoot this guy if he's a cop, but he has a ton and a half vehicle he can run us over with. So, you know, we had a situation in Palm Beach near a hotel, and the guy said he had a gun. We immediately pulled up, blocked it in our unmarked van. We had six SWAT guys jump out with submachine guns. We had the car surrounded in just about 2 seconds. And it was blocked in. Luckily, he didn't get to his gun. We used the element of speed, aggression, and surprise. No one got hurt in that, except maybe the pride of the suspect as he lost all control of bodily functions. But, you know, I don't feel so bad about him, that happening to him, because nobody got hurt. No one got shot. And that's in SWAT. You know, that was one dangerous situation of many. But that's the outcome most of the time in SWAT, is nobody gets hurt. And if you use speed, aggression, and surprise, and that I consider like one of the most dangerous types of things that we used to do.
Well, coming back to the home and the person who wants to be ready, obviously most people don't live in big estates, and they live in normal homes or condo or gated communities. And what can the average person do to better protect themselves in their home?
Okay. You don't have to have a ton of money to protect yourself. One thing I'm going to say, it does cost a little money, but, you know, it often is worth it, because they usually do this after the fact, and that's an alarm system with a monitoring company. You know, for about $400 or $500 a year, you can have that done. And I know that's a lot of money right now for a lot of people, but you know, what will happen is, yeah, burglars can bypass that, but usually most people, burglars, when they see that, they're going to go to another house that isn't protected. They also have the new IP cameras, which you can watch. You can set up in your house, and you can watch it on the Internet from work. So there's some really great things out there. They cost a little bit of money, but there's other things you can do that don't cost that much. When I was in the burglary strike force, we used to dress all in black. My guys used to do the same thing the professional burglars did, and we used to go to these areas between the houses and hunt for these guys. And the two things that were the biggest deterrent for us when we were patrolling was motion sensor lights. We hated those things because we're sneaking around these estates looking for the bad guys, and all of a sudden, boom, you get hit with a big flood of light. You just leave that area. So if you mount those high on your house in the right places, excellent, excellent low-cost deterrent. The other thing, believe it or not, that was the biggest deterrent for us to get out of there was dogs. And not all dogs are great at it, but a good dog that senses people, that can hear people coming, they'll smell you. We couldn't get it within 100 yards of some houses with the dog there not barking and going crazy. So, you know, dogs are absolutely a good alert. And, you know, they do cost some money, but if you already have one, very, very good protection. Another low cost, keep the hedges trimmed around your house. You know, these guys like to hide and sneak around, and that really hurts them when they can't get up close to your house. I could go on. You could, you know, keep your jewelry in safe places. Get to know your neighbors may be another good thing. Good locks, kind of the basics. You know, you want to keep your one thing. You want to keep your sliders blocked in with some pieces of wood, because sliders can get easily. They jingle them right off the tracks and make entry that way. So that's some of my number one tips. I think I would give somebody, and I do all those and more at my house.
Do you feel that the level of burglaries is going up with the current economic situation, or is it still relatively stable as to what it was before?
Well, I haven't looked at the stats recently, but it's pretty much without fail. When the economy gets bad, unemployment is up, you're going to get more. Okay, it's a trend that happens everywhere. So you really, this is the time you really need to take note of it. And you know, the economy is not good, and it's not going to be turning around anytime real soon. So I think it's, you know, taking precautions now is definitely the smart thing to do for everybody. Just being a little more careful.
Do you think that people who live in condos should have those alarm systems as well? You don't see very many of them in condos.
That's a whole different situation. It never hurts to have an alarm. It really doesn't. Condos, one good thing about condos is that you can secure the doors very well. Make sure that the locks are good. I know they have doormen in a lot of them. That's good. And if they have camera systems, even better. One word of caution. We had professional burglars that would climb these condos, and at human nature, like I was talking about earlier, they find an open door in the back of one of these condos on an upper balcony. And I'm talking, they're climbing 4 or 5 stories high. And especially these condos that have the balconies, you can climb right up. And what they do, I mean, an upper balcony, what's everybody think? Oh, I'm safe, no one's getting up here. Well, guess what? There's lots of burglars that will climb up there, knowing that a lot of those doors are unlocked. So make sure you block those sliding glass doors in. And I'd use a double protection. There's some flip locks on those you can put on the sliders, plus blocking the doors in with wood.
You said 4 or 5 levels. Is that
four. They can go higher. They've gone higher. In Palm Beach, we had a guy known as Spider-Man, and he would go to the very top floors, and he'd have a rope with a loop on one end, throw it up over the balcony up above him, and then pull the loop down, pull the rope through it, climb right up the rope, and do the same thing till he gets all the way up.
And this was at the dead of night? The dead of night? No one would see?
This was at night, and guess what? The guy, you fit your surroundings. The Palm Beach burglars stay in the dark and wear black, but what this guy did, and we had a little bit of videotape of him, was he wore khaki clothes. And why did he wear khaki? He fit in, he could walk along the condos, and these condos were light-colored, so if someone was walking down the beach and he was climbing the building, they wouldn't see him because he blended right in with it. So if he was wearing black, he would stand out. No one ever spotted him doing it. He got away with it. Burglars, there's a lot of smart burglars out there, and they use the terrain and tactics to their advantage. But they use human nature. They know people leave upper doors and windows unlocked and where they hide their jewelry and other valuables.
Was he caught?
Yeah, he was caught, and he was caught down south. I forgot the exact location, but it was somewhere in south, further south, Miami, I believe. And that had they actually caught him because he had a lot of the stolen merchandise had pawned it. They found it in his apartment, and they were able to tie it to other burglaries. So he was caught that way, but he actually never caught him in the act. Which is very hard to do. I mean, people think, oh, you know, as a police officer, it's, you know, you catch all these burglars in and half out of the window. Doesn't ever happen. Very rarely. I have caught some burglars and caught them right after the burglary, leaving the scene and things like that. But a lot of these guys are really on their toes when they're actually around a house. They know all the dangers, and it's not an easy thing catching them in the act. The homeowners have to take an active role in protecting themselves. And a lot of people just really get lax about it, and they end up taking all these precautions after they get burglarized. And one note that just happened to a few friends of mine recently is if you move into a new home, make sure your alarm system is hooked up and ready before you move in there. A couple people I know of have been burglarized right after they moved in. Someone in the neighborhood sees them moving in. They know they don't have any alarms or anything hooked up. They have all their things in there, and no one's there. And guess what? They get broken into. So just a word of caution, a couple things, that's a couple incidents that just happened recently.
What about your security as you're entering your home or exiting your home? What should you be aware of?
Okay, when you're entering and exiting, that's another thing. You want to have your front entrance well lit, and if you have a garage, all the better. You know, open the garage and drive in, close the door. But even then, you want to be aware of your surroundings. One of the most important things in security is preventing anything from happening. So, you know, cut down, you know, hedges and things like that around your front entrance where you're going to be walking. Always make sure if someone's home that let them know you're coming home and what time and when you're out. The same thing, but you have to just take precautions and be aware of your surroundings is probably my number one tip on that. And make sure your house is well lit when you leave, so your lights are on, so when you come back, it's not dark.
I know that you're a taser instructor. Did you ever use it in your police work? And do tasers really kill people like the news would have us understand?
I was a taser instructor for years. I trained security personnel and executive protection personnel on it. Outstanding weapon. I did use it several times. I was probably the first one to use it in Palm Beach. And it works extremely well. However, you have to be trained on it and know how it works and know the principles behind it. It doesn't work 100% of the time. There's a lot of things that can happen. It fires two probes. One of those probes could miss. Where the probes could be fired from too close so that they hit too close together and the person doesn't get the full effect of the taser. So there, it is very effective, but you have to know the limitations and what to do if it doesn't work the first time. And as far as your question about is a taser kill people, no. The taser does not kill people. There's no medical proof of that. There, you'll see all kinds of things on the news about the tasers killing people. But in the vast majority of times, what it is a drug overdose. These kind of people are already fighting the police. They're going crazy. That's why the police were there anyway. And they just OD'd on some type of drug, and their hearts are getting ready to explode. And whether you spray them with pepper, you deploy a taser on them, you have to hit them with a stick or fight them to the ground. They're going to die right there. And it's usually drug related. There's some other problems that can cause that, but almost without fail, they found out that it wasn't the taser. You know, it's the exertion and everything as a result of fighting the police. It just happens that the taser was the thing used to subdue that person.
When you retired from police work, you went into private security consulting for some very wealthy clients. Well, what is that like? What kind of work do you do for them beyond what you mentioned at the beginning of the show?
Well, that's pretty challenging. My past police work was a big help in it, but there's a lot of aspects in private security that you have to be an expert. You can't be an expert in everything. So I call in the experts when, say, I may look at their surveillance system, and I know from my experience as a burglary supervisor how these guys get in, and I know where these cameras need to be placed but, you know, I need to call in the experts to set up and tell me how many megapixel of resolution I need and all that other good stuff. So I have a team of experts that come in. So I'll do everything from working with the contractors to get the proper surveillance system for somebody. I'll set up a control room for somebody with security, and I'll work with security forces. I'll help hire personnel and make sure the security guys are trained properly for a particular site, and and just make sure the whole operation runs well for them. And I'll do things like do risk assessments for their yachts, risk assessments for their aircraft, because these people are they're flying around the world in their private aircraft and these yachts. And what does that do? It draws attention. So we'll do assessments on where they keep their aircraft. Is it safe there? And when they do travel, when we go out, we have to be careful and watch for things like is anybody watching them? You know, when they get there, we're with them and we're making sure there's nobody checking them out. So we do counter surveillance, and that's a big part of what we do. And we make sure everything is set up for these people. They have extra cars available, transportation, so that there's no they're not standing around and putting themselves at risk.
I have to ask you, of course, what do you think about the pirate attacks in Somalia? What do you think we should have done about it?
Well, it comes down to it. You know, our military is absolutely outstanding, and I wish they could handle the whole thing. But I don't know if we have the resources for that to be doing that in that area. But, however, they need armed security aboard those boats. There's no other way around it. Or armed escorts. These guys are great that are on the my hat's off to these guys on the boats with the fire hoses and the captains doing their evasive maneuvers. But you know what? They don't get paid enough for that. They do a good job and they're trained well. There's a place in Dania that has a great facility for training them, but they need armed, trained security people. These are pirates. They're dangerous, and they attacked a cruise ship. And in our business, when they do stuff like that, you better open your eyes because their tactics are changing, and the world's changing. And when they're getting all this money, a lot of that's going to be funneled to terrorist elements in places like Somalia. So we have to stop it. I hope our government gets involved in it and goes after these people and everybody supporting them.
We have about 2 minutes to go, but I'd like to understand if you could share with us why they are not armed. Why, with all the attacks on the ships, what has been the rationale for not arming them?
That's an international type deal. They're in international waters, and they're going into all these ports, and there's all these rules and regulations, you know. But it comes down to it, you know, we have the right as citizens of this earth, I don't care what country you're on, to protect yourself. You're getting attacked by thugs with weapons, and you're expected to fight these people off by, you know, evasive maneuvers and fire hoses. And I think these guys are great for doing what they do, but the thing is, it's not a fair fight, and we don't need to be fair with pirates. These guys, I think, should be treated like terrorists. I really do.
So our international agreements are tying our hands behind our back? Is that it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have to go ahead and, if there's laws that need to be changed, international, this is the time, you know, they talk about our new cooperation in our government now, and let's see if we can do it in this. This is important. It's the shipping. It's affecting worldwide shipping. I think something needs to be done immediately, and we need to go in. You don't just go in after the pirates that are coming after these ships. I mean, they're supplied. They have people that are supplying them. Where they have organized people behind them, and they need to be taken care of.
Paul, this is so interesting, and I want to mention to our listeners that you'll be joining us again in one format or another. We're talking about some joint projects where we can help educate people either through Rights Radio or Rights University and other things we have planned. And it is really a delight to have you on the show, and I just want to thank you again.
Thank you very much, Joyce. I appreciate it, and I hope I helped your listeners out with a few tips.
And you helped me as well. Very interesting. Thank you. And this is Dr. Joyce Starr from RightsRadio.com. Thank you for joining us. Please be with us again next week at the same time. And we look forward to having you with us. Bye-bye.